Time to start. Just a short practical thing. I announced last time that we had the change in rooms next week. We've switched back here now, so it will be here next week as well, and not in Eureka as it was announced. So we'll be here all the time. The plan today is to, of course, to do go more into the core here, talk about central terminology, and I will also give you the first assignment for the course, a short paper that you will write, and I'll talk a little bit about the papers that's involved there. Just a few words in the beginning here of what we are talking about here. It's really important that you don't end up with the assumption that research is only what we're talking about in these classes, because we are focusing very much here on a very limited part of the whole field that we called that we call research. I'm focusing a lot on and a lot of the examples that we're using here has to do with typical empirical research, where we gather data, where we specify a hypothesis and test that out, where we're extremely reductional, we try to focus things extremely well, and we'll base this on earlier theories and stuff like that, which I mentioned the last time. This is only part of the research field, as I said. Things can be done in other ways. You may be part of a system yourself, you may be part of an organization, and you want to see whether the changes that you are inducing in that organization really has some effects or something like that. That's typically what we call advocacy, that you are trying to make changes and see whether that happens. There could be more theoretical stuff that's also research, where you try to make theories. You don't necessarily gather data, but you try to analyze things and understand things and describe and explain some effects. I don't know. Constructivist types of research. But what you probably will be doing later yourself is what we could call pragmatically oriented research. It will be maybe a little bit of data gathering and a little bit of empirical research in it, but not necessarily very theory based. Or maybe you'll just analyze some field and try to make theories, I don't know, but at least you will probably try to apply a more pragmatic approach to things, and that may also be good research, of course. And even empirical research is not necessarily just pure experimentation. I will focus here a lot on experimental methods and the reductionalistic approach that has to do with that. But there are also a number of more, you could say, empirical research methods where experiments as such is not done. Like were descriptive methods where you describe something. Maybe you describe something before you're analyzing the problem further on and make some systems for it or whatever. It may be historical research, it may be correlational, pure correlational research, meaning that you just compare two things and see whether they're related without necessarily trying to use some experimental methodology based on it. And it may be more what we call qualitative research, where you make up or where less numbers are involved and more of your interpretations of what you observe is done. But all this can be good research. We have chosen to focus on quantitative empirical research and it maybe a lot of experimental methods, because that most clearly define some of the terminologies that's necessary to describe research and to write research. It's a lot cleaner in that area. It's a lot cleaner to define variables, to define reliability, validity, to define research questions and see what they're supposed to be like. So the terminology we're talking about here can be applied, I think, to most fields of research. You may not necessarily do this type of research yourself. So where do we start? All research starts with a research problem or research question that you want to analyze. And this is really the core thing when you're doing academic work. You have to have a question there. And as we defined research problems here, we say that this is an interrogative sentence. It's a sentence that asks a question. Not a general question, but more, you say, more a concrete question where you say something about variables, what's involved in the question, which variables are involved, for instance. Well, let's say, let me think of something from my field, for instance. I could do a question. I have this idea that our personality or preferences for how to handle information, like do we want to handle information in a verbal way rather than in a picture-like, image-like way? I say that this will affect how we, how sensitive we are to bad quality in pictures and video, bad visual image quality, noise in videos, for instance. I have this idea that I would say that people that are visually oriented are more sensitive to noise than those who are not visually oriented, and those are verbally oriented. Then I'm putting up some variables, and I say something about the relationship between these variables, and the variables here are sensitivity to noise and my personality or my my visual versus verbal preference. And I say something about the relationship between these two. What I stated now was more like a hypothesis. The research problem would be something like, does my visual cognitive style affect my sensitivity to noise? For instance, that's just that would be the research problem here. It's stated in a questions form, as I said, and it should be testable as long as I can measure sensitivity in some way, and as long as I can measure this cognitive style thing in a good way. So then I express variables. I express something about the relationship between these variables. It's in a questions form. And of course, it should be as precise as possible. Let's just go on to this one. Because I've used this word quite a lot now, and it's an important one to remember. This is one of the key terms you need to know about. What do we mean by variables in research? Well, we define usually two kinds of variables, and it's this relationship we're exploring. We have an independent variable and we have a dependent variable. Uavhengig og avhengig variabel in Norwegian. The independent variable, it's typically in a research setting what we have control of. That's what we want to, that's the thing that we are manipulating in an experiment. If we had this idea that girls are more creative thinkers than men, or something like that, then gender, boys or men, women, would be the independent variable that we're dealing with. The dependent variable is what we are measuring as an effect of changes in this independent variable. In this example, then, the ability to think creatively or something like that. The ability of creative thinking. Get it? Important. Because we manipulate the independent variable and we see whether that affects something out there in the world. Something specific. The dependent variable. Now, this is important because there are so these variables can be quite general in there when we are stating them in a research question the first time, at least initially. They may be very general statements, which is difficult to measure in some ways. So it's really important that we try to move then from, when we're defining variables, we try to move from the general first statements of a variable to a more specific definition of the variable. And a more specific, what we typically talk about then is to operationalize the variable, to make them into something that's measurable and comparable to in other contexts. This is, of course, important to be make research repeatable by others and to make it possible for us to be critical readers of a research question and a research article. Just to go more into this, let's try a typically, well, this could be some kind of an independent initial statement that has to do with, well, we call it a research problem. Did Lillehammer Olympics, Winter Olympics in Lillehammer in 1994, I think. Did that make people in this region more happy? It's a good one, right? But it's rather general, isn't it? What do we mean by this? Well, one of the variables that's involved in this statement is quite clear, right? Which one is that's the independent variable? What would the independent variable be here? Happy isn't the independent. And that's easy, right? Lillehammer, well, yes, no. Or before, after. That's the right one here. Before, after Lillehammer Olympics. That's the independent variable here. And probably that's a straightforward thing to define. Doesn't need much operationalization. But the other one may be a bit more difficult. That's the dependent variable here. And that is happiness. How should we define happiness? Yeah, but a lot of statements are like this when they are in. People perform better when they get this type of software. Organizations become more safe or more security aware when we apply this method. But it's really difficult to measure something like that if you don't operationalize it in a better way. What could be an operationalization of happiness? Any ideas? Well, it can be a number of things. Of course, one way to operationalize something like this would be to say that happiness as measured by a tool for measuring happiness or a questionnaire for scoring happiness or something like that, which may exist. I'm sure it exists. But it can be done in other ways too. Well, the first one would be the most obvious or most typical way to do this. But I know that what a research group actually did here was something else. They went out in a street, in the main street in Lillehammer, on a Saturday, on several Saturdays before and after the Olympics, and they counted the number of smiles on people. So that is just another way to operationalize something. It's measurable. You make it measurable. And that's what we mean by operationalization. What you may discover then is that some of the terms that you are stating in your initial problem, some of the variables that you are putting up initially, becomes very fussy when you try to formalize them. And you may want to cut things down into smaller questions, maybe. So you may want to define several variables that you want to measure instead of just one. So maybe you want to define happiness here or measure happiness here a number of ways. This operationalization is an important part of formulating or planning research in a good way. But it may also show to be a very difficult thing to do now and then. But it's a really important task to go through when you're doing research. I would like you to spend some minutes now discussing these two problems, or these two, because they're problem statements that I have here. Two different ones. We have one, let's say this is a, we want to see whether an attitude campaign that we have launched, let's say we are now working for some traffic security organ, and we want to see whether a campaign that we have launched that had to do with the reduction of mean speed or something like that. We want to reduce speeding on a specific part of the road, let's say from here to Lillehammer or something. We know that it's a problem that a lot of people drive too fast there, so we want to launch a campaign. Maybe we put up some posters or something like that, and we want to check the effect. And so in our problem description here, we want to see whether this campaign actually reduced speeding on highway. Does it reduce speeding on this highway stretch? That's one of these problems. It's a rather specific one. And then we have another one, which may be a bit more difficult, and that is meditation makes us into better humans. Discuss this with your neighbor here for a few minutes. and try to come up with, of course, first, what is the independent and the dependent variables, and which of these concepts or variables needs further definition or further operationalization for both of them. Yeah, the first one is easy. Okay, should we try it now? The first one. It's pretty straightforward, right? What's the independent variable? The campaign is the independent variable here. That's what we have control over. Before the campaign and after the campaign, to be more specific. That's the variables there. And the dependent is, of course, the other part here. Speed. Or speeding. Which may be a difficult one as well, I don't know. Which of these needs definitions or needs to be more operationalized? You say that speed needs to be operationalized. The first one is pretty straight, right? Because we know the campaign, it's for before and after that one. How can we define speed then? average speed of all users one day? Yeah, could be. Could be something else as well, probably. The number of tickets being issued there during a period or something, before and after. Accidents, maybe. Yeah. Because, as you see, the number of people driving more than 15 kilometers over the limit, for instance, something like that. There are a number of ways to do this, and different ways of doing it may result in different conclusions and results. For instance, if you count the number of, or count the medium speed on the road, that the result there may be different than the number of people driving 20 kilometers an hour more than a load or something like that, because it may reduce the mean speed, meaning that the already calm drivers, they reduce their speed, but maybe this really the speeders, they continue to speed or something like that, which then could be another conclusion than the first one. So the way we define the variable here, even in this quite straightforward thing, could have impact on the conclusions that we come up with in the end. Now, what about the other one here? Independent variable is... Independent is meditation. Yes. And dependent is then obviously the other one. Better humans or something like that. But that was more difficult, wasn't it? Both the independent and the dependent variable needs to be operationalized here to make to become meaningful at all, to become measurable at all, and to become meaningful at all when you're trying to interpret this thing. Any suggestions for the first one, the independent variable? Is it straightforward? Meditation, yes, no? Yeah, that's how much meditation, the more meditation you do, the more the better you are. yeah. But the obvious problem here is that meditation is, as such, is probably very difficult to... Well, it's not one thing. Meditation could be to watch an aquarium or something like that, or it could be a specific technique. And those who develop these techniques are probably saying that their technique is a lot better than all the others. So the general thing here that meditation is helpful isn't helpful or something like that. Well, that doesn't go for our specific method of doing meditation or something like that. So you need to be very specific here to say, what do you mean by meditation? Well, meditation here is just time spent thinking of nothing or something like that. Time spent not doing a specific task could be something like that, or it could be time spent doing transcendental meditation as described by this yogi or whatever they're called, master. That's the first one. What about the next one then? Better humans. It's really difficult, right? What do we mean by that? I guess you came up with a lot of different definitions here or operationalizations of that. What could be something that's possible to put into numbers that has to do with being a better human? Any ideas? Number of good deeds. Let's just go on with this one. The number of good deeds you do. Then you will have to define good deeds again, yes. So that's a typical example that this creates an hierarchy where you have to define things on different levels. Okay, next suggestion. Productivity. That's being a better human, yes. It's something very different from being a good human. Right? Yeah? Yeah, but both these are just examples of another problem. Are they when you define them as the way you did now, are they good enough to make into numbers so we can analyze things based on them? Productivity. That's a rather general thing as well, isn't it? Productivity as measured by what means? The number of words written per day or something like that. Then it would be measurable, right? Because you need, in a lot of cases, you need to go one step further to be able to make this into something that's possible to do research on. Yeah. Stress levels as measured by the skin, got the conductance or something like that, which is a stress indicator, or pupil dilation or something like that. Yeah. Pulse or something. Yeah, but you need to go that, you need to be that detailed. Because then you could also, when you read this, say that, well, yeah, they have measured something here. But really, I think that this isn't a good operationalization of good humans. This is just one way of defining it. I would have done something different. And that would be a better way to measure this. And this is something you can do when the terms are properly defined and operationalized. And they need to be very specific when you're going to do research on them. This is a typical error that's done in a lot of research. You try to be, you start out with a very general description. And you do something without really analyzing whether it's a good operationalization you have done, and then in the end you end up with a very general conclusion that has very little to do with the real world because you have just measured a very tiny aspect of something. A good problem description allows you to write down an hypothesis in a research situation. And the hypothesis, as it's used in research, when you use research terminology on it, is a very specific thing. It's a prediction of an outcome. It's a prediction of a relationship and the direction of a relationship between variables. And it's your best guess here. And it should be so specific that it's possible to either throw it away or confirm it. And we then split this into two different types of things, or there are two kinds of hypotheses that we use in science. One is what we call the scientific hypothesis. That's the change that has to do with the manipulations we have introduced. It's typically a hypothesis that say that there is a relationship between the independent and the dependent variable. To go back to my first example, then, boys and girls are different when it comes to their ability to think creatively. The hypothesis here would be that girls are more likely to come up with creative solutions than boys in our experimental setting. Girls will produce more creative solutions than boys. That says something about the relationship between the variables, and it says something about the direction here. The scientific hypothesis is that there is a relationship between these two. And that is then compared to the conservative hypothesis, the null hypothesis that say that no, there are no relationship between these two. And that's the basic, that's the status. And that's what we call the null hypothesis, while the scientific hypothesis is that there is a relationship. This is usually the case. In extreme settings, you could say that, well, given a situation where there is a common idea that there is a relationship, well, then that could also be a null hypothesis, and your hypothesis that there are no relationship could be a scientific hypothesis, but that's more rare. Usually, the null hypothesis is the there are no difference thing, part of a such an hypothesis. But these two are important to remember, because what we do when we do statistical analysis is that we are comparing these two. And if there aren't overwhelming evidence for the scientific hypothesis, more than 95% or something like that, well, then we keep the null hypothesis. This is the falsification principle here. We should say that there are an overwhelming chance for the scientific hypothesis to be correct before we say that the null hypothesis is wrong. It's not a 50-50 thing. There should be an overwhelming thing here. Okay, let's just end this first hour with something completely different again. Some of you may have seen this one before, but it's typically quite interesting to do it. We talked last time about something called biases in our way of observing things as humans. Just try another one. A lot of you have seen this before, so keep quiet. It's just next. Just going to see how this is a pretty simple thing. I'll just do it without audio here. I don't think we need it. I can give you the instructions. It's a pretty straightforward thing, but it has to do with how good we are as observers. It's a pretty easy task we're being given here. We're going to see two basketball teams that are passing basketballs between them. It's a white team and a black team. What you're going to do is that you're going to count the number of passes being performed by the white team. Right? But it's a very confusing situation because they move around a little bit and they do pulses. And you're going to count the number of pulses being performed in this minute-long video. You know the task now? You're going to see how many pulses the white players are performing. And it should start about now. So Huh? 14, 15, 16. I think actually the correct answer is 15 here. But how many saw the gorilla? Yeah, a lot of you did. A lot of you didn't. You may have seen it, and even if you have seen it, it's when you try to count it, it's quite difficult. Because in the middle there, a lot of you didn't see it, I know. In the middle there, a gorilla comes out, and it isn't very discreet either. So what do we call this? This is something we called inattentional blindness. Things we don't focus on, we don't see either. So we're in a typical situation where people are to observe something, we tend to see all the stuff that we are expecting to see. And we tend to ignore a lot of the other stuff that happens out there in the world. Inattentional blindness, Simmons, in quite there's a lot of other research done on this as well. You have all these videos where a lot of things changes during the video. For instance, you talk with a guy on the street, there is someone asking you about the direction to somewhere. And then comes somebody with a big case or something that interferes or comes between these two people. And then the people on the person on the backside that asks for direction. Well, he swaps with, maybe the man swaps with a woman or something like that, or a bearded man swaps with one that's clean shaven, or one with glasses switches with one without glasses. And typically the one who tries to explain the way to somewhere, well, he is not aware. 20% of them even doesn't detect the gender change there behind this case. So we're very bad observers when we don't focus on something. Okay, 15 minutes break.